This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later in the show, eye-tracking technology could go mainstream this year. Ann Thompson will tell us more about it and focus on technology. First up this afternoon, Jillian Dougherty was born with Down syndrome. Her father, Paul Dougherty, longtime sports columnist for the Cincinnati Inquirer, has just published a book about Jillian and their family. An Uncomplicated Life, a father's memoir of his exceptional daughter, tells stories about Jillian's challenges and triumphs and boundless capacity for joy. Paul joins us later in the show to share his family's experience and discuss Down syndrome. Joining us now, Chrissy Vinson, volunteer and communications coordinator with the Down Syndrome Association of Greater Cincinnati, and Jennifer Beacons, a speech-language pathologist with the Thomas Center for Down Syndrome Services at Greater Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center. And Chrissy and Jennifer, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you for having me. Yes.
You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Chrissy, what exactly is Down syndrome?
Well, Down syndrome occurs when an individual has a full or partial extra copy of their 21st chromosome. It occurs in one out of every 691 births. It's the most commonly occurring chromosomal condition. And so we estimate that in Greater Cincinnati, our organization serves around 12 counties, and we estimate that there is about 1,100 individuals living with Down syndrome within those counties.
So this is a genetic condition then?
Correct.
Now, do we know what causes it, this genetic condition at all, or do we have a better grasp maybe of what doesn't cause it?
We don't really know what causes it, but we do know what doesn't cause it. And there are a lot of misperceptions about what might cause Down syndrome. For instance, you know, specifically, is it something related to what the mother did during pregnancy? But what we do know is that it's attributed in mothers that are over 35, there's a higher incidence of children being born with Down syndrome. But the majority of children with Down syndrome are born to mothers that are under 35, because that's who's having more babies.
Now, Jennifer, what are the challenges that people with Down syndrome face?
Some of the challenges that people with Down syndrome face have to do with their ability to learn and their ability to communicate successfully. As a speech-language pathologist, I work with children, and one of the biggest concerns I hear families say is they are really concerned about the way that they speak and how clearly they're able to speak and how they're able to make themselves understood to others. Children and individuals with Down syndrome typically have very strong receptive language skills, which means they're able to understand a lot more than they're able to tell us about. So there's also a misperception that people with Down syndrome aren't understanding just because they might not sound as clear. But really, we do know that they're able to understand quite a bit.
Chrissy, what about medical problems? Are they more prone to face certain medical conditions because of Down syndrome?
Well, it always depends on the individual with Down syndrome. It does vary. We have some individuals with Down syndrome that may have eye or hearing issues, and some individuals with Down syndrome have heart issues as well. But it does depend on the individual with Down syndrome.
One of the things that we do know is that children with Down syndrome, up to 50% are born with congenital heart defects. And in Cincinnati, there's a large heart institute, a children's hospital that takes care of many of these children, and lots of advances have been made with cardiac surgery, which is partly has contributed to expanding the life expectancy of individuals with Down syndrome. Years ago, the cardiac surgery wasn't able to be completed to the degree it is now. And so we're seeing children be able to successfully recover from heart repair and go on to live much longer lives.
So that's interesting what you're saying about lifespan, because I think what I read was the lifespan is now 60 years on average. As recently as 1983, it was 25 years. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the other reasons? You're talking about the heart surgery that's available now. What are some of the other reasons for this increased lifespan?
Medical care in general for individuals with Down syndrome has improved drastically over the last several decades. One of the largest, of course, has to do with the heart complications that children have at birth and the ability to repair those very tiny little hearts. Other things that can contribute to that is the support of families as well as resources just within the community. When you think about 20, 30, 40 years ago, individuals with Down syndrome were often institutionalized, and now individuals with Down syndrome are living very full lives with their families as very active members of the community.
Are more people living independently who have Down syndrome, Chrissy?
Yeah. You know, as a matter of fact, as to what she said, I have an aunt who is 63, and she has Down syndrome. She still lives at home, but we are seeing more individuals live independently. Our organization hosts an independent living retreat each summer. So we have individuals that are, you know, 18 and up that want to learn independent skills, and maybe they're not ready to live independently, but just to learn those independent skills. We teach, you know, communication, as Jen spoke about. We also teach about community service and appropriate relationships. So we are seeing that.
Are there more people with Down syndrome who are getting married?
You know, I see it. Do you, Jen?
Absolutely. And I think when Paul gets in later, we'll be able to talk a bit more specifically about that. But definitely, we're seeing individuals with Down syndrome fall in love, get married, have really wonderful, meaningful relationships, even if they're not getting married, being in very personal relationships, which is an important aspect of being human.
Yeah.
Now, are there different types of Down syndrome?
There are three different types of Down syndrome. The most common form of Down syndrome is trisomy 21, and that's where we see that every cell of the body is affected by three copies of the 21st chromosome. There are two other types. One is called translocation, and that's what we think of as the inherited form of Down syndrome, where there's a small portion of one of the other chromosomes that breaks off and lands on the 21st chromosome. And the last type of Down syndrome that we know about is called mosaicism. And basically, when you think about that, that's like a mosaic. So some pieces, some cells are affected and other cells are not. It is a misconception that children with mosaic Down syndrome tend to be less affected than those with trisomy 21. What we do know is that there's a wide spectrum of abilities in individuals with mosaic Down syndrome, as well as the other two other forms.
Paul Dougherty is joining us now. Paul, good to see you.
Thank you. Good to be here. Sorry I'm late.
No problem, Paul. You've got work to do. It's March Madness season. So.
Yeah. You know, as much as I like this book coming out, March is about the worst month for me to have it come out between spring training and basketball and making travel arrangements. And yeah. So anyway, sorry I'm late.
Pretty busy
I'm here.
Time. No problem. Tell me about the title of the book, An Uncomplicated Life. Why did you choose that particular title?
Because Jillian truly lives an uncomplicated life. That doesn't mean that it's a life without complications. I don't know that I could take four buses to and from Northern Kentucky University every day. That seems pretty complicated to me. But excuse me, her priorities are clear and always have been. You know, who she loves, who loves her, what relationships are important to her, how she maintains those relationships, and the joy she brings to other people. I don't think that's very complicated at all.
Mm-hmm.
We make it complicated. We typical people do, but Jillian never has. So that's kind of the reason for the title for the book.
You think people have a lot of misperceptions about Down syndrome and what it really is?
Well, we've lived the misperceptions. So, yeah, I guess the best way to answer that is I've always asked that people see Jillian rather than look at her. I think seeing is an active act. It requires you to invest something emotionally, some time, whatever, you know, empathy, with a person. Looking at something is like looking at television. It's passive. Anybody can look at you and pass judgment on you. I think we have all kinds of people in this country, African Americans chief among them, who could tell you that from civil rights years and even today. Don't judge me by looking at me. See me for who I am. So I guess that's been the main message. And getting back to your question, that's the biggest hurdle I think that we've had to overcome in building the better Jillian.
Now, what went through your mind the day that you found out that Jillian had Down syndrome?
Well, we found out the day she was born, and as I wrote in the book, it was the last bad day. We allowed ourselves one day to be angry, to curse God, to grieve, to, you know, why us? And quickly moved on to, well, this is what we have. This is who we have. And she's a beautiful young lady. What can we do to make her life as good as it can be? To allow Jillian Dougherty to define herself, same as any other kid. But sure, the first day, you know, it's not something you're anticipating or thinking about. And And it's a shock, certainly a shock to the system when it happens.
Did you or your wife have any feelings of guilt? Like, what did we do anything to cause this?
No, not really. Again, not after that first day. We didn't have time for that. I don't mean to sound like I'm father of the year or that my wife Carrie is mother of the year, because we weren't. We're just parents. But there are lots of wasted emotions in life, and that's one of them, you know? We didn't waste time on woe is me. We didn't waste time on anger, because it really didn't help further the cause, you know?
513-419-7100 to join our conversation. You can also email talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Jennifer, you wanted to add something to that.
I just wanted to add my experience as a sibling. I was 10 when my sister was born. And one of the first misperceptions that I had was I asked my father if she was going to be, and then I spelled the word retarded. And I think that's sometimes what people equate when they see an individual, when they just look at an individual, as Paul said, with Down syndrome, is the connotation that they're perhaps retarded. But as a sibling, I've learned that that is very far from the reality of what is.
You know, one thing that strikes me, Chrissy, as we talk about Down syndrome is how many people it actually affects. So Paul's daughter has it. Both you and Jennifer have family members with Down syndrome. My cousin's son has it. A close family friend has a nephew with it. And I saw a statistic that said 38% of people in the U.S. know someone who has Down syndrome. Is it that many, or maybe even more than that?
You know, it might even be more than that. We were just talking this weekend. We marched in the St. Patrick's Day parade to promote World Down Syndrome Day coming up this weekend. And people were stopping us as we were walking in the parade and saying, oh, do you know so-and-so? Do you know so-and-so? And we always say, you know, someone knows somebody with Down syndrome, and they've always, in most cases, have a very positive experience with that person. So, yeah. I would say even higher than 38%.
What do you think, Jennifer?
Especially in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
I think it's a very, well, I'm also very biased having three family members with Down syndrome. So, yes, my personal sphere, I know many, many, many individuals with Down syndrome, but, it's always someone knows at least a friend of a friend.
513-419-7100 to join our conversation. Let's talk with Victor in Camp Washington. Good afternoon, Victor. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi. Thanks very much for taking my call. I find this topic very important. I had an older brother. He died just 2 years ago at the age of 60. At the time, he was one of the oldest in Hamilton County. But I think what's interesting is the fact that as a family, we've lived through the whole history of Down syndrome. I remember he was institutionalized way back then. As a matter of fact, my mother tells the story that when he was born, the doctor said, just put him in an institution and forget he was ever born. And then many years later, when they emptied the large hospitals, he was at Orient. When he was in his 30s, I was in my late 20s and early 30s. As a family, we were able to reconnect. He was severely retarded. He had very limited language. But he was just one of the most memorable, wonderful people that you would ever meet. Even though he had limited language, he called everybody honey. And it was just a remarkable experience. And it's so exciting to see the history of all of that changing. I've met also a lot of people who have family members or friends with Down syndrome, and I always take the opportunity to tell them my own story.
Victor, thank you for sharing that with us. And it sounds like your older brother was a remarkable person.
I'm grateful to live now instead of then, I guess, is the best way to put that. And researching the book, I did a lot of that, and never made it in the book, but I did a lot of research on you know, a generation, two generations, certainly three generations ago, how people with Down syndrome or other intellectual disabilities were dealt with. And it was a shame. I've never met anyone who has taken the time to see Jillian that has not benefited from the relationship, you know, as much as Jillian has benefited.
We'll continue our conversation after the break, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. We're talking with Inquirer sports columnist Paul Daugherty, Chrissy Vinson, volunteer and communications coordinator with the Down Syndrome Association of Greater Cincinnati, and Jennifer Beacons, a speech-language pathologist with the Thomas Center for Down Syndrome Services at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center. Paul's new book, An Uncomplicated Life, tells the story of his daughter's challenges with and triumphs over Down Syndrome. And you can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Paul, there you talked in your book about a point where you almost lost Jillian to bronchitis when she was about 5 weeks old. Did that experience early in her life show you just how resilient your daughter was going to be as she grew up?
Absolutely. I tell the story in the book of how they were pondering putting her on a ventilator. She couldn't breathe. Excuse me. Yeah, she had the bronchiolitis, and they had tried various places in her body to stick her to get what nutrients, whatever, into her. And her veins were so small, most of them didn't hold the IV. So the last place they tried was the top of her head. And she'd been in the hospital, oh boy, I don't know, 10 days at that point, 9 or 10 days, and was not making a lot of progress. And they'd had all kinds of aerosol treatments and what have you. And things were not great. They weren't dire, but they weren't great. Anyway, they put this needle in the top of her head. And for whatever reason, whether she was just fed up with the whole deal of being stuck with needles for a week and not making any progress, she just let out this wail that cleared her throat, literally cleared, without being too graphic, cleared the mucus out of her lungs. And right after that, she started getting better. I mean, it was amazing. And yeah, that was the first indication that this was not a young lady to be trifled with.
You really learned something from your daughter, didn't you?
Absolutely. Yeah.
513-419-7100 to join our conversation. Let's talk with Bill in Camp Denison. Hi, Bill. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi. Good afternoon, all. I'm calling to see if Mr. Daugherty is going to do any book signings other than tomorrow night at Joseph Beth, as I'm going to be out of town tomorrow night. So any follow-up signings, Mr. Daugherty?
I have not heard. The HarperCollins people control the marketing and the publicizing of the book. I'm sure we'll do a few more around here. We're going to work on some national stuff as well, but if something comes up, I'm sure that we'll make sure and let you know about it.
I want to mention that my wife, who is not an overtly sports woman, the only reason we're subscribing to the paper is because you're there still.
And, well, that is sort of a backhanded compliment, but I appreciate that very much.
Well, when Cliff and Krista retired, she said we could give the paper up, and then she said, no, I still want to read Paul 3 days a week, so we'll keep it as long as he's there.
Well, thank you. It's 4 days a week, though, by the way.
4 days. Well,
there you go.
She's sharper than I am. So thank you so much.
No, thank
you. We'll look for subsequent signings. Thanks.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate the call. Paul, can you tell us a little bit more about the signing that's coming up?
Tomorrow night at Joseph Beth in Rookwood, 7 o'clock. Come one, come all. I am not in charge of the marketing, publicizing wing of this deal. All I do is show up where they tell me. We've got a couple other things planned nationally that I probably shouldn't talk about, but tomorrow night, definitely Joseph Beth, 7 o'clock.
Let's talk with Letty in Loveland. Good afternoon. You're on Cincinnati Edition, Letty.
Hi. Thank you. I was very impressed and touched by the article yesterday in the Cincinnati Enquirer by Mr. Daugherty, and I realize now Jillian's getting married, which is wonderful. And a question arose later in discussion with some other people yesterday, and it never occurred to me, but was there a time when the people with Down syndrome were not legally allowed to marry one another?
No, maybe the two ladies here can speak to this better than I can, but no, you're allowed to legally marry. The problem is that the tax considerations, the benefit considerations if you do legally marry, and they're in the process, hopefully, of trying to change that so you won't be punished as a person with Down syndrome if you choose to marry, but it's never been illegal.
How could you be punished?
Well, it's a benefit. It's a benefit situation where you lose benefits if you are married rather than single.
And if I could just ask one more question, what about Down syndrome individuals having children? Is that an okay thing also?
Well, it's okay, but generally they don't. The men aren't especially fertile, and if you do have a child, it's generally another child with Down syndrome, and
it does pass on. Okay,
correct. And John Faraday wrote the story yesterday, by the way, not me.
I didn't know anything about your daughter until yesterday, and other people had known about it because you had written about it in the Sports Page, which I don't always read. So thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Letty.
So interestingly enough, there is some data that's about men with Down syndrome being infertile, but the data is relatively old, and it was from when men were institutionalized. So they're trying to take a look at that to figure out what the actual percentage of infertility is. We do know that it's somewhat reduced, but as a whole, they're not sterile. And women with Down syndrome are also able to reproduce. I don't know the exact percentage of, what their chances are for having a child with Down syndrome if two individuals with Down syndrome have a baby with Down syndrome, but I feel like it was like a 50-50 chance that there is a possibility that they will have a child that's unaffected, particularly if they both have trisomy 21.
Paula, Jillian's going to be married later this year, so you'll have a new son-in-law soon. Tell us about him.
Ryan Mavropoulos. Jillian and Ryan met 10 years ago. There's a program, I don't know if it still exists, but called Top Soccer. Soccer for people with disabilities, and Ryan's father was the coach, and he asked her to homecoming, I guess when she was a sophomore at Loveland and he was a junior at Sycamore. And it took it from there. And that was my greatest fear was we could do everything we could possibly do to get Jillian educated. And we did. The school system was very glad when we left. But we couldn't make other kids like her or be her friend. And I always worried about the social aspect more than anything else. I worried, that the other kids would have the sleepovers and the birthday parties and the homecomings and what have you. And it turned out to be unfounded. Ryan and Jillian have been an item for 10 years now. They share an apartment together and have for the last year and a half or so. And now they're going to share their lives together.
Now, did you have the traditional father-in-law talk with your future son-in-law that you better be good to my daughter or I'm not going to be real happy with you kind of thing?
Every time I get the chance. Yes, I know where you are. I know where you live, Ryan. And Ryan's he's very funny, but I'm always good to your daughter, sir. I'm always good to your daughter.
Wonderful.
See that you are.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks.
Future father-in-law. Let's talk with Beth in Loveland. Good afternoon, Beth. You're on the Cincinnati edition.
Hi. Thanks for having me. Mr. Doherty, I think I ride the bus with your daughter in the morning.
How about that?
Does she ride the three?
Yes, she does, from Montgomery up across at Harper's Point where the apartments are there.
Yep. I sit across from her. I don't ride every day. I did for a while, but when you mentioned that she goes to Northern Kentucky University, there is a nice young lady that's decked from head to toe in swag.
That would be her. That would be her. She gets off downtown and transfers to the tank bus.
Yeah, yeah.
Does she behave herself?
She sleeps.
Okay.
Uh-huh. She has her headphones on and she pretty much sleeps the whole way. And I think I may have substitute taught her when she was in high school.
Oh, good.
I spent the day with a young lady that matches Jillian's description. I don't remember precisely what her name was, but we had an interesting day because we had a difference of opinion or some kind of confusion about where she was supposed to be when.
Uh-huh.
And it involved going all the way out to the softball field to verify something, and she definitely knew better than I did. I was just a substitute teacher, but I was charged with just kind of hanging around with her all day, and she was not happy with me because I was very inept at what I was doing.
Oh, well, Jillian definitely has a mind of her own, so she might have just been trying to get over on you, too, like any other kid.
Well, I wouldn't have led with that. It was a fun day, and I really had... It was. I will remember it because it was a funny day traipsing all over school with her, and then she actually did give me the slip at one point during the day, and so that got me into a little trouble with the teachers in the classroom, but nothing major at all. And I also wanted to mention that years ago when I was single, I roomed in a house with a lady who I had been living there for about a year, and suddenly her granddaughter and daughter returned home from living in Brittany for many years. And this young lady had Down syndrome, and she could speak three languages. So whenever I hear people have a kind of a stereotypical impression of what Downs people are capable of, I remember my friend and how she arrived with a very thick speech impediment, speaking French, English, and Spanish kind of simultaneously. And so for a while there, it was hard to communicate, but she could speak three languages. So it was very cool, and she was neat.
Oh, that's remarkable. I can't speak three languages. I can't speak one.
I can barely speak. Yeah, I can barely speak the one, Paul. So you and I are both the same. 513-419-7100. If you'd like to join our conversation. Thank you so much, Beth, for the phone call. Are we doing a better job? Are the educational opportunities becoming stronger for people with Down syndrome?
Yeah, I would say, at the Down Syndrome Association, we have a school age matters coordinator who is often in schools making sure that families are assisted with any IEP issues or anything like that. And we're also seeing a lot of adults with Down syndrome attend college, just like Jillian and Ryan did, you know, NKU at the UC TAP program. So it's enhancing, yes.
I think just in the last 20 years, especially, we're seeing more and more individuals with Down syndrome being included in regular education curriculum. So the many more opportunities are there educationally and being able to understand how individuals with Down syndrome are able to learn and some of their strengths and some of their needs. That has come a long way in the last several decades. And so we're definitely seeing an improvement in individuals' ability to learn, especially reading. I think there's a big misconception that individuals with Down syndrome aren't unable to read. And that couldn't be further from the truth. And I remember the first time my sister read out loud when she was about 7 years old to my aunt, and my aunt just started crying. But now most of the children that I see at Children's Hospital are learning to read and become quite good readers.
Jennifer, when does speech therapy start for somebody with Down syndrome, and how extensive is that?
So that's a great question. When we talk about speech therapy and actual how the child produces sounds, really we focus on that when the child's able to do more talking. So speech therapy of what we think about in terms of how do we help children communicate can start much younger, even within that first year of life. It really is dependent upon the child's abilities and what the needs are that we're seeing. So those first several years, the birth to three, children get early intervention, often in the home through Help Me Grow in Hamilton County and First Steps in Northern Kentucky area, and really focus on trying to develop those core communication skills, being able to understand words, being able to express themselves, their needs, their wants. And then as they get older, we work on how clear the speech actually sounds.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Paul, there was an interesting point you made in the book about a time when people with disabilities, Down syndrome, it was a time about 40 years ago, I believe, mid-70s, where they were actually segregated in the education system. And it's quite a far cry from what we see today, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. It's not completely gone. They still like to put them in special ed classes. And there's a term for that that I can't remember. You guys might know what it's called. Resource room or something like that. You know, we spent a lot of time fighting the resource room. And ended up winning because we had the law on our side, but you're right. And the biggest reason we wanted Jillian in the regular ed classroom was not necessarily book learning. It was socializing with kids her age, her peer group. I think kids at that age do a lot of modeling. They do what their buddies do, what their peers do. And we wanted Jillian to be in that environment, with typical students, not just for the academics, but for the social benefit.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. Paul, why did you have to fight the school? Were the school administrators just not aware of Down syndrome that well?
Well, yes and no. I think people who work for schools are like anybody else. They get used to doing things a certain way, and they're comfortable doing things a certain way. And when you tell them that they're not supposed to be doing things that way, they chafe. We had to bring in fact, Ryan Mavrilis is Jillian's fiance. His mother is an advocate. That's what she does for a living. So we brought Ellen into our IEP meetings and fought for Jillian and basically just stuck with the law. Here's what the law says you have to do. And some were grudging and some were not. I don't mean to paint the whole educational system as being anti-kids with intellectual disabilities. It wasn't that way at all. You just had certain members of people involved in the decision-making who were somewhat stubborn, and you try to keep breaking down walls. You know, we used to, my wife and I would kid ourselves. We wanted to get some coonskin caps because we were Daniel Boone here. And my answer to these people was always, you know what? We're the first people basically to ask for what the law entitles Jillian to have, but we won't be the last. So you might as well cut your teeth on us and do it the right way with us, because you're only going to have to repeat this in the future if you don't obey the law. And I understood some of the restraints that the school district was under, financial restraints. It costs a lot of money in some cases to do what the law says you have to do. So I was sympathetic with them to a point, but I didn't care about that as much as I cared about getting Jillian educated. And I think ultimately that's what we did. But long answer to a short question, there's still some resistance to what is supposed to be done. But I think the longer we go through this and the more families that become educated about what their kids are entitled to, the less problem we're going to have with it.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Paul, there was another interesting story you told about Jillian first learning to ride a bike. A lot of parents go through that experience where they teach their child how to ride a bike, and it's an exciting moment in the child's life and the parent's life. It really was a big deal when Jillian first learned that, wasn't it?
Well, one of the things you get when your child with a disability is born, lots of well-meaning people come into the hospital room and bring you all these pamphlets and literature about basically saying what your child will not be able to do. We didn't really want to read any of that. In fact, we didn't. We thanked the well-meaning people and threw them all in the trash. But one of the things that they said that Jillian probably would not do would be ride a two-wheeled bike. Jillian was probably 10 or 11 when we first attempted this, and it took us 2 months. We live on kind of a common drive off the main road, so we were able to practice a lot. We did it every single day for a couple of months, and she learned how to ride the two-wheel bike. And the last time we rode bikes 25 miles on the little Miami trail.
So. And you said, hi, I proved that pamphlet wrong.
Yeah, I kind of proved so the pamphlet Jillian. Wrong. Yeah, it was Jillian's doing. She had the persistence and the will, and I just provide a little bit of the patience. But that's just a small example of how sometimes the kids are sold short. And, you know, don't allow some pamphlet to define your kid. Let your kid define your kid.
Do you think that's true, Chrissy, that a lot of times children with Down syndrome are getting sold short?
Well, speaking on the bike issue that we just talked about, we have a bike camp each summer, and I don't have children yet, so I haven't had the opportunity to see my own child learn to ride a bike, but I got to see 40 kids with Down syndrome learn to ride bikes this summer, and just the look on the parents' face and the look on the kids' face just to be able to accomplish that. And we had some kids that were, well, they're not really kids, teenagers that were 19 and 20 learning to ride a bike, and just being able to do something that they might have been told they couldn't do or they might have thought they couldn't do was amazing. So.
But don't ever underestimate people who have Down syndrome, right?
That Absolutely. Is true.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. We'll take a short break and we'll be back. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us this afternoon, Inquirer sports columnist Paul Dougherty, Chrissy Vinson, volunteer and communications coordinator with the Down Syndrome Association of Greater Cincinnati, and Jennifer Beacons, a speech-language pathologist with the Thomas Center for Down Syndrome Services at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center. Paul tells the story of his daughter Jillian and the challenges she faced in her triumphs over Down syndrome in his new book, An Uncomplicated Life. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's talk with June and Ripley. Good afternoon, June. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Thank you for letting me speak with you today. I have taught special ed for many, many years. I'm retired, but I'm 78 years old now. When I first began teaching in the early 50s, the Ohio State law that any child who could not benefit from public school education because of mental, physical, or emotional reasons were automatically excluded from public school. They were given a certificate called an E1. And therefore, they had no educational benefits at all. Now, since we've come a long, long way in that beginning, we had schools for specifically for the handicapped. Then we came into the public schools and with mainstreaming, and now we are having inclusion. And my point is that much of it occurred because of the work of the parents of all these children, making sure that they could have an education. So I want to applaud the parents, and I also want to say that I feel very privileged to have been able to be a part of the growth of all of this.
June, thank you very much for the call. Anybody want to weigh in on what June had to say?
Yeah. I'd just like to echo what June said. You know, just as a child growing up and watching my mom and dad advocate, much like Paul and his wife, Carrie, watching them go before the Board of Education and really try and get schools to change. You know, a mindset change is very hard. We all say we would like change, but actually, you know, accommodating and doing these different things can be very difficult. But I think what's been beneficial is being able to have a wide variety of opportunities through individualized education. So some children, you know, not every child with Down syndrome is going to flower and be a jillion. Some children are going to need more specific supports. But right now, our education system allows for many different types of opportunities and many different levels of support. And now that's available, and that wasn't available when June was first teaching, as she alluded to.
Chrissy, how beneficial is mainstreaming?
Well, I think we promote, you know, inclusion in the classroom. And I was just at Fort Wright Elementary on Thursday for a career fair, and we have an adult with Down syndrome that works at our organization, and she was presenting on her career. It wasn't my career, it was about her career. And the students have a classmate with Down syndrome, and just the way that they used person first language, and they were just asking so many questions, and they knew so much about Down syndrome already that it was just, I think it was very beneficial for both the, you know, their classmate with Down syndrome to be in the classroom, and then for them to experience that as well. And to note, I'm also very inspired by the parents each day. As in my profession, I thank the parents. I'm so inspired by their advocacy work and how much they just love their children and the involvement that we see. So,
let's talk with Janet in Montford Heights. Good afternoon, Janet. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you, Christy, for advocating so well for our children. My son was born in 1981, and I was one of those parents who was told that it would be a good idea to institutionalize him, so I echo what some other folks have said, how far we've come. I just wanted to mention some of the things that my son has accomplished. He is a world traveler. He's been to Australia. He's visited the Brisbane Zoo. He's been to Israel. He's been to Alaska, to Europe. He is an actor. He is in the St. John Passion Play. He plays Barabbas. For those of you who know Barabbas was, he's the bad guy. He's a volunteer at the Cincinnati Zoo, and he has a girlfriend. But one of the issues that we always have is transportation, not being able, of course, to drive a car, and you can't always get access. That is sometimes a bit of a holdback, and I wondered if Paul has experienced that in his raising of Jillian.
Yeah, no question. We're fortunate now that she has the job at NKU, and it's accessible with the four buses a day. It's not easy, but it's available. But you're absolutely right. There are other places that we have thought about getting Jillian a job. She worked several summers at one of the local childcare facilities close to our house, and it was, you know, it was a half a mile up the road. It was no big deal to take her up there at 8:30 in the morning and pick her up at 1 in the afternoon.
Right.
But it's, you're right. It certainly limits the opportunities that your kids have if they're not able to get to a job via public transportation.
Mm-hmm. You know, or social events when he has a
right.
date, mom picks up the date and drops them off and goes and picks them up and drops them off for lunch or dinner and then comes back home and goes and picks them up again. And I'm very happy in doing that, but it is a challenge.
Right. Yep. I definitely have heard that from my parents as well, and trying to coordinate social events and things like that. The Thomas Center for Down Syndrome is actually part of a larger division of developmental and behavioral pediatrics, and part of the community outreach program that they have there has explored a variety of different options regarding transportation. One of the things that's been up and coming just in the general population is the use of Uber, but perhaps in the future we will be seeing things like apps that individuals with intellectual disabilities can use to coordinate using their vouchers. So we're hopeful that some more transportation opportunities are on the near horizon.
Jan, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Let's talk with Jamie in Batesville. Good afternoon, Jamie. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to bring up how lucky we are in the area to have so many businesses that make it a point to hire people with disabilities and to really put forth the effort to allow any individuals with disabilities room to work. I know the local Kroger where I'm at in Batesville, they always have two or three people with Down syndrome hired. A little while back, I was actually in the line, and a lady, several people ahead of me, was giving one of them a hard time, and I watched the store manager make the lady leave in defense of the young lady. And I'm a constant patron of Kroger on account of what they do in that way, and they're not the only business in town. We have several of them that do that.
Ryan works at Kroger.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Kroger does a wonderful job, as do several other businesses. He's right.
And you're right. Cincinnati is a wonderful place for someone with Down syndrome to live. We have a conference each year. It's a national conference, so a lot of Down syndrome associations from all over get together, and just to hear the lack of resources they have in those areas, and to see how much we have here in Cincinnati, is truly remarkable. So.
Paul, when you were writing the book, were there any parts of the book that you felt were more difficult to write about, or that you really felt a lot of joy when you were writing?
It was chronologic, so I just kind of went from one episode to the next. There's a chapter about homework. To me, homework represented all the whole of the Down syndrome educational experience. You asked teachers' aides to modify homework. Sometimes they did, sometimes they didn't, and sometimes when they modified, all they did was cut it from 10 questions to 7, which isn't modifying. The effort that Jillian put forth to get the homework, what was kind of emblematic of who she was, and the effort that we all had to put in. I mean, she'd have 8 spelling words in fourth grade. Normal kid, typical kid, what is 8 spelling words? Half an hour? Maybe. It was 2 hours every night with Jillian, and when she would spell a word, it was cause for celebration. I remember one night, and I put it in the book, we were spelling store, and Jillian would occasionally have trouble with the silent E, or she'd put the E in front of the R, and for maybe a half an hour, we worked on store, and when she finally got it, I literally got up out of my chair at the kitchen table and danced around the room, you know, S-T-O-R-E, store, store, store. She thought I was crazy. But that's the kind of thing that we did in getting her to that point. So, yeah, that was a high point. Other high points are obviously, you know, hallmark moments, her first prom, her engagement. She was on the dance, junior varsity dance team in high school, being able to keep up with that and be a part of that group. So there was never anything in the book that I thought this is really not good, not great, and I'm having a hard time writing this. It all kind of worked.
Chrissy, is the future looking brighter these days for people with Down syndrome?
Yeah, you know, as we talked about, the life expectancy continues to grow with medical advancements. You know, people with Down syndrome are vital members of the community. We have people, you know, attending college and, you know, inclusion in the school. So I think, you know, the future looks bright. And like I said, I'm consistently inspired by parents. I think the parents just advocating for their children is going to lead to a bright future.
Well, Paul, Chrissy, and Jennifer, thanks for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for having us.
Enquirer sports columnist Paul Dougherty, Chrissy Vinson, volunteer and communications coordinator with the Down Syndrome Association of Greater Cincinnati, and Jennifer Beacons, who's a speech language pathologist with the Thomas Center for Down Syndrome Services
at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center. Paul's new book is called An Uncomplicated Life, a father's memoir of his exceptional daughter.